All right, all you good crusaders of Crypt Nation, welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. I am your host, Pizza Mind, and I am joined today by the COO of Pixelmatic, Chris Wood. Pixelmatic is a video game company that is now merging cryptocurrency and video games together. So I can't wait to hear how this is going to work from their spectrum of things. Chris, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Aaron, thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you about this. So it's a real pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you, Chris. You know, you've got some real interesting gaming industry veterans over there at Pixelmatic. And you are the puppet master behind the scenes that have, you know, really brought this whole group together. Tell us a little more about what is Pixelmatic and what are you guys trying to build?
Well, Pixelmatic's, it's a traditional game studio, really. You know, we launched in 2011. Samson Mo is the CEO. So Samson is, actually a lot of people will know him as a sort of Bitcoin luminary. He's a huge influencer in the space. He did a massive announcement during Bitcoin 22, for example, with his recent launch of Jan 3, which is about rolling Bitcoin adoption across nation states. So he was one of the heading up the El Salvadorian project over there. So he's, you know, a massive Bitcoiner, but actually what people don't know is that previously he was a video game industry executive. So he previously worked at Ubisoft and Relic in very senior positions. He essentially built Ubisoft's East Asian success from the China office in Chengdu and worked on some incredible games like Company of Heroes, for example. If you've got any older game industry veterans who enjoy a bit of strategy, then Company of Heroes will definitely be one that you'll know. It's the highest, you know, most critically acclaimed strategy game in the world by Metacritic standards. So we are a traditional video game studio and we're working on Infinite Fleet, which is a massively multiplayer online game where you are a commander of a fleet. You take charge of five of these gigantic battleships fighting for humanity against the Atrox aliens who are here to absolutely pepper us. So your job is to get in there, customize some ships, make a really awesome fleet, and play alongside hundreds of thousands of other players to fight back against this alien menace.
But yeah. Now, after watching humanity behave in the pandemic, I might want to be Team Atrox. Is that an option?
Maybe down the line, possibly. I can't say anything now. But in the first place, yeah, it's good to be human, fine. Man.
Well, it's getting better anyway. And speaking of getting better, the gaming industry, you know, a lot of our listeners here at the Crypto One podcast are a little bit older. They might think of video games being something you used to go get at Best Buy in this big package. You'd have to pay $50, $60 for it. And it's the kind of thing that you only buy your nephew or your son for a Christmas gift. And it's money out the door every time. And there's a new game every year, more money out the door. But this is a drastic shift when you add cryptocurrency and blockchain to it, when there's different incentives. It's not just a company making money, but it's an ecosystem that's being built in a virtual way. It's a whole different way of thinking about these things. And for people that, you know, maybe retired or disabled, could also potentially augment their income and bring money back in the door. What's going on with this change in philosophy in the gaming industry?
Well, you know, I think you have to wind the clock a little bit back and just think about the value of virtual items in general, right? Particularly game items. So as you said, you know, I mean, even when I was a kid, you know, only the sort of quote unquote geeks played games, right? Now it's a massive mainstream industry that's bigger than the music and movie industries combined globally, you know, Hollywood, Bollywood, all of it. It's smashing past it. It's a huge industry.
That's not a lie either. I was just reading the other day that esports is now bigger than every major sport in the US except for the NFL.
Yeah, it won't be long. I'll tell you now, it won't be
long. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's video games are very much here to stay. And it's not even, you know, it's not even at the maturation stage because the compound annual growth rate is still at 10% year on year. you know, it's absolutely obliterating most of the forms of media, which is why you now have AAA stars. You've got Keanu Reeves, Mads Mikkelsen, all the big stars are getting into the games now. So, and when you consider that, you know, the millennials, Gen Z and all that were living, well, what will now be post-pandemic, hopefully soon, going through all these, remote work, living on social media, living online, essentially, virtual goods mean a lot. You know, they actually have a really, really strong value. So I don't know. I can't remember when it was when the Oblivion game came out, 2008, 2009, something like that. And it was one of the first games. It was this really big game back in 2008, I think. And they had downloadable content, which was an armor for your horse, like a nice piece of shiny armor for your horse. And at the time, everyone went ballistic saying, this is absolutely mental. Who on earth is going to buy armor for a horse in a game? You know, now Fortnite, they made, I think, I can't remember if they passed 2 billion or they got very, or they got close to 2 billion in their first year of operations. The first year the game went live. Completely free to play game. You don't need to pay a penny to play it and get the full experience, but you simply buy costumes and things for your characters, you know, and that is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's incredible. So when you then take the idea that people, gamers particularly, do find massive value in digital items, well, it makes sense that players should have a free market for those items. Certainly, in my opinion, I'm sure Aaron, you would agree, that what cryptocurrency, what the blockchain technology allows for is the ability for players to have a form of ownership of their items in that they can freely trade it, you know, player to player or on any platform that they wish, rather than just under the umbrella of a company. Now, typically, you know, if you play World of Warcraft, another massively multiplayer online game, typically you wouldn't be able to sell, the World of Warcraft gold or whatever it is, the currencies, the digital items within that game or outside of it. There are black markets. There are people that do sort of naughty things, which are against the terms and conditions, and they do sell these things, but there's not you have to trust another party. And it's against the terms and conditions. So you could get blocked, you could get banned, all that kind of thing. So when you say, you know, what's this new paradigm shift? I think it's the idea that game companies don't necessarily have to be that centralized force when it comes to trading your digital goods. Now, with cryptocurrency, you can use things such as atomic swaps, for example, to facilitate trade, which means that you don't need to trust the other party that you're trading with. So with an atomic swap, I can load up my sword of Azeroth or whatever it is, and then the other transacting party can load up their digital asset, and both of those transactions must take place or nothing happens at all. So you don't need to trust anyone. And that is really powerful, because when you're trading digital goods and things like that, there's a lot of scams and stuff online, and it makes it very difficult. So I think this is very powerful technology indeed when it comes to opening up free markets in not just obviously game items, but digital goods in general. But yeah, in our case, of course, game items.
Yeah. Who are the leading providers of these services that are making a trustless environment for in-game item transactions?
Well, I mean, we use a Bitcoin second layer technology called Liquid. So we are, I mean, just full disclosure here, our team is very, very Bitcoin orientated. I say we build off of Bitcoin specifically because we feel that at the base layer, Bitcoin is the most decentralized, you know, because there is not one CEO of Bitcoin or something like that, you know, that can change monetary policy or anything like this. We feel that Bitcoin is the solid base layer, and we build off a second layer of that called Liquid. And we think it's kind of early days for Liquid, but we feel there's a lot of potential on there. And of course, any assets that is minted on the Liquid network can be traded with any other asset on that network. So, you know, there are other play-to-earn games and things that are using technologies like Solana, Ethereum, of course, various other blockchains. But we opted for Bitcoin because we feel it's the most battle-tested, most battle-hardened, and most decentralized protocol. That being said, to take things to what we're building a little bit, actually, we have a slightly different view from a lot of play-to-earn games out there, in that as traditional game developers, we don't feel that the actual game assets themselves need to be on the blockchain, because blockchains are slow. And it's not the best way to implement game items, because players, in order to, you know, interact with a lot of play-to-earn games, they have to go through a lot of hoops. It's very challenging. You know, they may need MetaMask, they may need to buy this or that cryptocurrency in order to participate. And a lot of gamers are a little bit crypto skeptical at the moment. You know, it's still early days for a lot of the average gamers, and that they're kind of put off, you know, by NFTs and things. So for us, we don't do that, and we kind of keep the blockchain under the hood, and we promote this as an average game, as just a game like World of Warcraft or EVE Online or anything like that. You simply make an account, you open a digital wallet in that account. You don't even need to know that we use Bitcoin or any kind of cryptocurrency at all. You don't need to know that whatsoever. And you will earn our in-game currency, INF, simply by playing it, by taking part, by joining in these events with other players and things like that. And you'll earn it directly into your wallet. And you never even need to know it's a cryptocurrency. The point is that it is non-custodial. And when you do learn, that's the point where you can take it onto, you know, other platforms and do interesting things with it. And with our spaceships, which are, of course, NFTs as well. So yes, I've been speaking a hell of a lot. I'll let you.
No, that's okay. So let's encompass that here, and just to, you know, extract the real value from there. So you're earning these INF tokens. What does the INF token do in that ecosystem?
Sure. So it, as I was previously saying, our belief is in free and open marketplaces for in-game items. Right. So that is what the INF token facilitates. So this is obviously a non-custodial token. Like I say, you open your wallet when you open the game, basically. You don't necessarily need any crypto knowledge in order to do that. But when you're taking part, you freely earn INF as you take part in the game. You can't buy it from us. It's not an investment. And so that will obviously stimulate the community to do things. You know, it's kind of an interesting incentive system. And then what it allows for is it powers our marketplace, our peer-to-peer marketplace, where you can buy ships, space stations, crew members, equipment, all this kind of thing on our INF marketplace. Now, the INF marketplace is obviously a piece of software that we built. It's centralized. It's in our game server. You know, it's very much for something that we have built and have control over, and that's perfectly fine. But players can take it outside if they don't want to use the INF marketplace, if they want to use it player to player, if they want to use it on another platform or anything like that. That's totally their choice and free. Our INF marketplace is simply a service that we offer. So the interaction with NFTs. Now, with NFTs, in our case, we can take it analogous to the keys to the car, the keys to your spaceship, essentially. So an NFT is just a token. It's just a pointer, a certificate, right, of essentially ownership to say that you own X or Y digital asset. So our digital assets are centralized on our server and our game server and all that kind of thing. You can't take them out or anything. That's crazy, in my opinion. You know, a game has to be centralized, but the NFT can point to assets as such. And so this key can be transacted again anywhere. You know, me and you could trade something on Telegram, right? You could give me some INF, I could give you the keys to my spaceship, or you could give me some other liquid asset, you know, liquid Bitcoin, or whatever other asset is minted, and we can trade that openly and freely.
And that's just how it is with any virtual world. The NFT is a key. For example, my Portals NFT is not going to actually let me, you know, take my Portals room out of that world, run it on my desktop, and just have my own little virtual world that's connected to nothing. No, it's the key to access that room on that server. So
exactly,
that's standard and customary. Yeah. Just wanted to clarify that in case anyone was wondering out there, like, I don't know if this is good or bad. Because this is a brand new world. We have like very little frame of reference to, you know, analyze these things. So I want to ask you some more very, very basic questions, and I hope I don't bore you to death with them. But you know, we're hearing, you know, this term AAA studio. And we don't know what that means. Like, is there a double A studio that's kind of good, but not that great? Is there a single A studio where it's just like a couple friends in their basement that just learned how to code and they're using RPG Maker? You know, what does that term actually mean?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. So like, and I guess an A studio would typically be called an indie studio, right? So an independent studio is something that may not, you know, they just self-publish or something like that. Very few people, maybe a team of 1 to 20, something like that, maybe building an indie game, which typically is focused on some specific game, core gaming loop and feature that's really good fun.
Like you only buy it through Patreon or something?
You could, or I mean, Steam is an open platform. Steam's a fantastic platform, okay, which you can list, you know, I mean, the thousands of games get listed every day. So there's so many easy ways to self-publish games these days. I think this is one of the big reasons why the industry is making so much money, because there are tens of thousands of games and anyone can participate. And then you have, you know, AA studios, you know, that they tend to be teams of maybe less than 100. You might have games like Siberia is an interesting game, for example. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. That would, I guess you would consider that a AA game. Games that you may have heard of, but they're not at that, I guess, that blockbuster level. You know what I mean? So when it comes to AAA, and where we position ourselves on that AAA front is to say, look, we are a team of veterans here where we have the capital, we have the resources and the technology to build something that is obviously innovative, but it's at that blockbuster cinematic level that is just gorgeous, kick-ass, and it's going to be a top game. So you might look at like EVE Online, World of Warcraft, this kind of thing. That's kind of like the competitive area that we're pushing ourselves into here when it comes to AAA. So obviously there's a high barrier to entry there, but that's what we're aiming for.
By now, you've probably heard all about cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, and you might have even already started investing in them. But did you know that you could invest in cryptocurrencies through your retirement account? That's right. With iTrust Capital, you can buy and sell cryptocurrencies from a crypto IRA and get all the same tax advantages as a traditional IRA. So iTrust Capital allows you to invest in over 24 of the most popular cryptocurrencies. And unlike the stock market, you can buy and sell 24 hours a day. The iTrust Capital platform is easy to use and it only takes a few minutes to create your account. And setting up an IRA is free and iTrust's fees are low. It's time to start taking control of your financial future. And with iTrust Capital, you can get all the tax benefits of a retirement account while investing in crypto. So visit itrust.capital/crypto101 to start investing today. Again, that's itrust.capital/crypto101. Taxes and conditions may apply, fees apply, and cryptocurrencies are a speculative investment with risk of loss, and iTrust Capital Incorporated does not provide legal, investment, or tax advice. Consult with a qualified legal, investment, or tax professional.
So we're talking a company with hundreds of millions of dollars invested per game, hundreds of people contributing to that game for, you know, multiple years at a time to design, as opposed to something like Angry Birds or Plants vs. Zombies.
Although, I mean, those games do tend to have massive teams, but they're probably more focused on marketing than anything else.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So now we've got an idea. A AAA company is a really big deal. It's a real company. It's, you know, got billions of dollars in market cap overall and, you know, funds invested entirely, most likely. And what was the vision, you know, for bringing cryptocurrency in? You know, I've got family that works for, you know, some very, very old video game companies that are very, you know, traditional. You could even say stuck in their ways, you know. But it's a model that's worked for, you know, 50 years. What was that aha moment at Pixelmatic? You know, of course, Samson's very tied in with cryptocurrency, so maybe the aha moment was from the very beginning. But what made you guys say we need to include crypto and blockchain in Infinite Fleet and other games that we make in order to be successful?
Well, the vision for us, I mean, interestingly, we were building Infinite Fleet, or at least building is a strong word. It was at a concept stage before we decided to implement cryptocurrency into the game. Now, because it was, you know, we were a traditional game studio, we were planning to build something really kick-ass that didn't, you know, even have crypto involved in it. But we, as MMO gamers, you know, we're all big sort of, we're all big gamers as such that are working on this thing, obviously, are very, 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 very familiar and used to this digital economy. It makes perfect sense to us. And as you said, you know, Samson is part of that Bitcoin space. But before that, he was actually running a gold farm in Lineage 2 back in the day. So he actually was doing one of these against the terms and conditions things where he had a bunch of people farming gold and he was selling it.
And why is it against the terms and conditions for some of these games?
That's a good question, to be honest. I think it's there's a few things. I mean, the first question is, you know, anti-money laundering, that kind of thing. To, you know, they want to be a little bit careful and safe on that front, which you can understand. And obviously, we're taking a very, very serious view on that as well. So we're doing a regulated offering at the moment that perhaps we can talk about later, but we're working very, very closely on the legal side to make sure that whatever we're doing in Infinite Fleet is very much legit. But also, I think it's just simply that the developers want to keep everything centralized and keep everything, you know, the money flows going up and not much going down. And at the end of the day, this is a new paradigm, right? I mean, play to earn hasn't been around for very long, but we are seeing AAA studios get really interested in it. Ubisoft have talked about doing NFTs. There was even, you know, because a lot of gamers are, I mean, I would say the majority, a very strong majority of gamers are against NFTs. It's not a popular thing right now amongst the average gamer. And even if you take these sort of luminaries in the video game industry, like what's the ex-Nintendo CEO called? Reggie, he's the ex-CEO of Nintendo America. And... He's like this guy that gamers just love this guy. You know, he's a real hero in the space. But even he now is talking about, you know, he's interested in this thing. He's interested in NFT tech, you know, and it's going to take some of these big companies to kind of slowly make the paradigm shift, because gamers tend to be quite against new ways of particularly monetization. You know, they get very concerned about this, thinking it's a grift, thinking that companies are just going to rinse them. So I think what it's going to take is doing this the right way and making sure that it isn't just a grift, that it isn't just for the developers trying to make a whole bunch of money, but there is power given to the players here. There is something that they can see as, oh, wow, actually, hold on. This digital item that I have has some value, and I could do things with this. I can actually take that somewhere else. I could go and, you know, like Animal Crossing or something, make some incredible island, gorgeous, beautiful island, and spend 1,000 hours on it. And when I'm, you know, getting a bit bored of it, I can actually, you know, liquidate that. I could liquidate that and move on to something else. And that's actually really quite powerful, you know, because you're then getting real value from your investment of time in a game, right?
Yeah, I've seen some YouTube videos of people using Minecraft to actually recreate heavy metal songs. They just like knock over a boulder and it hits all these other items on the way down. And I can't imagine how many freaking hours and days and weeks it took to recreate that. But it's amazing and it's dead on and it's really, really good. And if you could sell that world or access to that world or whatever it is, I think there would be a buyer for it, because that's an incredible feat of human creativity. So when it comes to creativity, definitely Team Humanity is in the lead, and it'd just be an amazing way to create more marketplaces for this stuff. Where do you think the video game industry is going to be in terms of that in another 10 years from now? You know, can I take my shirt from Fortmatic and put it into World of War? Not Fortmatic, sorry. Fortnite. Fortmatic's a wallet. Tells you where my face is at all the time. Take my shirt from Fortnite, and put in a World of Warcraft with a gun from Left 4 Dead and really customize everything across multiple blockchains and games and even studio vendors. Is that really the end goal that people are going to try and build, or is this really just way too early to tell as gaming studios just kind of dip their toes in the water just to see if it's even viable?
It's a big question. Obviously, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I don't believe that's the use case, right? And let me explain why. You're talking about taking digital items from one game into another. Now, obviously, those two games, if they're totally compatible with each other, then yeah, sure, that makes sense. You know, two developers could form a coalition and say, all right, my BFG 9000 from Doom or whatever, ID Bethesda, go and talk to CCP and say, you know what, let's try and rig up this BFG to a to a supercarrier spaceship or something. But there's an inherent issue, isn't there? Because, well, of course, but there's an inherent issue because then you're thinking, well, could the BFG go over to Lord of the Rings Online? Should we have Gandalf that's like mopping up with a massive, you know, what I'm trying to get at here is that
that's a million hit video in itself.
There you go.
Or just being able to port Gandalf into the Doom world would be amazing.
Oh, I would do that.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Absolutely.
But the point I'm trying to make, I think, is that games have to take a, well, studios have to take an open source paradigm to allow this kind of thing to happen. And that could always have happened, right? There have been many cases when it has, you know, Second Life, PlayStation Home. I mean, that PlayStation Home kind of died. It didn't do too well. The point being that games are crafted for a very specific experience. Now, of course, you could craft a game where the specific experience is this interoperability, and a lot of people are doing that right now, and they might indeed be very successful, you know, more as kind of like engines, I guess, or sandboxes that allow for it. So Fortnite, it works, right? Because they just have IPs that they bring in, and, you know, Minecraft, Roblox, these kind of games, they're very successful, and they will do with this interoperability. But it's not going to work with Infinite Fleet. It's not going to work, you know, you're not going to be able to bring spaceships over to high fantasy. It doesn't quite make sense. And I do think the blockchain, obviously, it helps remove some of the friction on this side. But in the first place, developers have to go with this open source mindset of, yeah, sure, you can take my IPs and bring them wherever you want. And that's just a case of the paradigm of the person who's building it, not necessarily the technology that they're building it with. So will it happen in the future? I mean, it could, but the question is, do people want it? I mean, I would say that it kind of already has happened in some games. Like I said, Minecraft, Fortnite, you know, it's already happened. But I wouldn't call it some massive revolutionary thing that's going to take the entire gaming world by storm, simply because people will always want to play Dark Souls and go through on a linear, you know, game that does have a kind of locked ecosystem as such. But what might be interesting is that if I do have, you know, something amazing on Minecraft that I've built, like you mentioned, the death metal song or something, if I can capture that as an NFT somehow, something that points to that, and just trade the key to someone else to have ownership, well, there's something. You know, like I say, I think I'm a strong believer in the free market idea rather than the interoperability of gaming items, because I think games actually need to be centralized. The game itself, I think the game needs to be centralized. I just think that the opportunity to trade goods should be open.
Makes sense. And you know what? As I'm listening to you talk, I think I figured out what the missing piece in this ecosystem is, and that's royalties as a service. If you could monetize an item or a character or a logo across anywhere, and the amount of plays or views or attention could then be streamed back to that thing, you know, that's something that NFTs allow. Then I think, you know, companies would be much more open with, you know, opening up the different little interesting things in their world.
Yeah. You NFT the IP as such, or the rights to it. I think there's some interesting stuff going on with music and blockchain at the moment, and I think this is something that's quite a similar idea. I think that could be a thing. Yeah, for sure. That's quite interesting.
There's things out there like Streamer, which is essentially trying to do like streaming money for workspaces, but this could actually just be, you know, let's say you wanted to use Batman in Left 4 Dead or something, you know, and you're paying, you know, so much you know, per subscription for whatever that service is that allows that. And then a portion of that is going back to DC for allowing you to play as Batman.
Well, I think that's interesting because I think, you know, because if you take, for example, security tokens, right? So security tokens will, you know, you can build the compliance and all the kind of rules into the digital asset, right? So if you could do something similar with IP and the rights to an IP, then I think that you're quite onto something there because that, you know, again, it's a free market attitude. It just takes whether or not the companies are up for it, you know, whether they want to do that. Because so they might want to be very protective.
Of course.
Yeah, it is.
Naturally, sure is. They want to protect not just their IP, but their profits mostly. You know, they don't want Batman to appear in some game that, you know, is going to be outlawed or is horrible, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, they can, you know, have certain partnerships with certain ecosystems and games. And I think it'd just be a lot of fun. Like how, you know, Marvel versus Capcom was like the very first like crossover fighting game where you're like, oh, this is badass, or, you know, Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat or whatever it was. And, you know, it was just the most fun thing at that time.
I think
there's going to be a renaissance of that. And I certainly hope there is. There's going to be some technical issues, but as far as, you know, royalties as a service, the technology for that exists already. It's just the tools have not been built and finalized and marketed yet. But, you know, we'll have you on again on the podcast, you know, in the next few years to see, you know, where things are at. And, you know, it may exist at that time. Who knows?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It sounds great.
Besides Infinite Fleet and anything you're building there at Pixelmatic, what are some other games that really showcase the next gen level of thinking of crypto and blockchain in gaming or play to earn that, you know, we should really keep an eye on? Just to understand, not necessarily play and have it consume our lives, but just to understand where this space is moving. Are there any examples?
I think it's a tough question because I think a lot of the more popular ones are the kind of copying of the stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's like a million copies of Bitcoin. That's usual. Anytime something's really good, there's a bunch of copies that are going to come out that change one letter.
Yeah, sure. I think in terms of blockchain games that I think are good, or the ones that I think that are, you know, that I quite like, I would say Gods Unchained. I quite like Gods Unchained. I think they're doing something pretty, pretty cool there because I think they approach it in a similar way, free market way. You know, you can play the game for free. You can enjoy it. You don't actually need to really have known anything about blockchain to play it, but you can. And I think that's the approach that I particularly like. And Spells of Genesis was one that I really liked as well. I mean, that's like old, you know, and I don't even know if it's still going. I haven't played it in a long time. I guess it must be, but it was one of the first in this industry that was doing something. And, you know, they had some really great gameplay. It was really good fun. And again, yeah, they took that approach that then they're not shoving the sort of, you know, you do have to download a dApp in order to play it with the blockchain, with the NFT assets and things. But the base game you can play without any of that. And I think that's a good way to approach it. Other than that, I'm waiting to see a real trailblazer. I think that Alluvium obviously is getting a lot of attention. That could be interesting. I think Alluvium could be interesting. It seems to be, I think that's the one that's spending the most time on actually developing something. And they've got quite far with it as far as I can see. So I've got my eyes on Alluvium to see where they go. They've got an interesting game there, I think.
That's great. So let's even backtrack even further because we've been hearing all kinds of stuff about metaverse play to earn. Can you really highlight the difference for us in a way so we can understand, you know, one's kind of like the other, but not really?
Well, I don't think the metaverse has been defined. I think the problem is that, in my view, the past couple of questions, I've maybe been a little bit pessimistic. I don't mean to be. It's just that I think the metaverse is quite directly, I would say it's just marketing buzz, and it doesn't actually mean anything. I don't think anyone really knows what metaverse means. You know, the metaverse is, if we say, okay, an online digital world where people can have an avatar and they can, you know, interact with other people, other products maybe, and whatever, if we're talking about this kind of online platform, that's been around since the early noughties. You know, that's been around since Second Life.
Super Mario 64.
Well, yeah. I mean, in a way, yeah, it's just online gaming, essentially. So I think I think metaverse seriously needs to be defined. What is it that people actually mean? Because what I see a lot of the time is some incredible marketing hype. You know, you'll get this gorgeous lady wearing some kind of VR headset and everyone go, oh, step into this, the metaverse as the fourth dimension of this and that and whatever. And then you open it up and it's just like, oh, sort of looks like an old browser game where people are just going across with some really terrible graphics. And you're like, what on earth is happening? Right. But
like, how could there be so many metaverses popping up all at the same time? It didn't make sense.
No, I think I don't buy into it personally. I think it's a fad that's going to disappear very soon. In fact, like I say, PlayStation Home, that's a metaverse, I think. Died. No one wanted it. Will it happen again? I just don't think people care that much. I think that people, what people care about is that they can make money from it. I think it's marketing. I think it's hype. I think that most people are just hoping that they can get into this thing so they can make some money and someone else who buys their stuff is holding the bags. So no, I'm going to be quite serious about it. I don't believe in it. And I think that if we go too far anyway, if we're taking like some Black Mirror ideas where we're all living in pods, I don't think that's a good thing, you know? So
I don't think that's pessimistic at all, Chris. I think it's very realistic and honest. So I appreciate that answer. And I tend to agree with you. You know, we just saw, you know, the Ape World or whatever it's actually called. You know, they just did an airdrop of their lands, launched Ethereum gas up to like 46,000 Gwei at one point. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And I see so many different lands popping up now. Like, who is really going to hang out in these things all the time? I really do think a lot of it is just price speculation and stuff. And I think there will be a few winners that were there very, very early at some of these launches or pre-launches. And yeah, there are going to be a lot of people left holding the bag probably forever, because the idea of actual land on Earth is that it's scarce. Earth is not growing in size. It's not going to get bigger. This is a scarce resource, but there's any number of millions or billions of metaverses that can be spun up. And unless there's just, you know, one or two that can tackle, you know, 90% of the market share, I think those are the only ones that are really going to have value.
I think so.
The rest are probably going to go away.
Well, that's it. And look, at the end of the day, the way I see these things is a bit of fun. You know, some people think, you know what? It's a bit of a laugh. Get a bored ape for whatever. And if it's money that you're willing to lose, right? Fine. You know, it's a casino. That's okay. Fine. Sure. If that's how you approach these things, no problem. But if it's a serious, you know, if you're making a serious investment, and you're putting your life savings on the line, I would not buy a Bored Ape by any means. But yes, so for this metaverse idea, I think that it's just promising too much without delivering a product a lot of the time. I think that to go back, you know, we're talking about play to earn, right? I'm not a big fan of this actual wording. So if you say play to earn, it's like, well, that's what the game has been crafted for, so that you can get in there and make money. Now, that's great if it's a byproduct of the game, in my opinion. If you've got an amazing game that's really, really fun, it's, you know, you just really enjoy this thing and you're having a lot of fun times with your friends, being social, you know, carving a legacy in the universe, all this kind of thing, great. And if you can make a little bit of money doing that, that's great too. But the problem, I think, with a lot of these things, like you hit the nail on the head there, many of them are going to die. And the ones that do are the ones that are focused so much on the investment side rather than the actual product, rather than the game and making it fun and social, immersive. You know, these are the ones that are just focused on the economics. They're going to die. They're a pump and dump. Because they can't scale. They can't go long term. You know, with a game, you need something that's going to last for a decade or two decades, you know, for sure.
Yeah, that's true. And the games that I really fell in love with when I was younger, you know, I still want to play today just because they were that much fun. And I didn't care if I had to pay for it or, you know, if it was paying me. But the idea of doing something that I like to do and instead of having to pay a subscription for it, but instead there's a symbiotic ecosystem that's built in where I can contribute to it and actually make a living as an artist or a miner or a coder or just a participant in someone else's raid, like a mercenary for hire, and that's all permitted, I think is really, really cool. And
yes,
you know, it would have definitely changed the perception of video games growing up for a lot of us had that been there in the first place. But, you know, it was way ahead of its time. But now it's here. Esports is a thing. You know, you can very justifiably say, like, I'm a professional gamer and this pays my bills. And that's true for hundreds of thousands of people. So, maybe millions at this point. I don't know.
Well, that was the dream, man. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I said, oh, I've got to go to university. I've got to get a real job. You know?
Ugh.
But, what's going on? But I think, yeah, millennials, Gen Zs, they're growing up in a world where they can make some very serious money, actually, being a streamer, being an esports competitor. I mean, the payouts in some of these Dota tournaments and things are absolutely phenomenal. You know, of course, you have to be top of the game. I don't think an average gamer is going to struggle a little bit. But where this space does open that up is that there might be something more for the average Joe as opposed to the absolute pinnacle top player, maybe, or at least that's the hope, right? That's the hope.
Absolutely, more opportunities for more people. That's the name of the game in crypto. So absolutely. With that in mind, just a couple more questions before we let you go. You know, aside from anyone that you're working with directly, who's someone in the crypto space or the gaming world that really inspires you to continue doing what you do?
In the crypto space, I'm going to sound like such a maxi here, but I really do resonate with Michael Saylor, to be honest. I really do. And the reason for that is because I guess I kind of find a lot of the sort of anarchistic side of things a little bit hard to get on board with. I think it, you know, the idea of a completely anarchistic Bitcoin world is not exactly my cup of tea necessarily, although I do believe strongly in hyper-Bitcoinization. But what I really like about Michael Saylor is that his message is very easy to swallow, and he does believe that, you know, things should be regulated. And to be honest, so do I. I think there's, you know, back in, what was it, 2016, 2017, when all those ICOs came up, and how many people lost their life savings over these things, you know, these unregulated securities, which is what they were, you know, these ICOs, DAOs, all this kind of thing. They're completely unregulated Wild West stuff. And a lot of people got hurt with these things because someone can, you know, just mint a coin, call it Chris Coin, get some celebrity to pump it, and then bang, people are just wiped out, rug pulled. And, you know, his approach to rolling out Bitcoin essentially across the corporate world, allowing for things, you know, pushing the message of, you know, how this thing should be seen as an asset class and whatever. I do strongly believe in that. And I think he's going to do a lot for Bitcoin adoption. I mean, he already has, but I think he's doing a lot for Bitcoin adoption. And that really excites me because I'd love to live in a hyper-Bitcoinized world. I'd love to be able to, you know, pay for a Starbucks over the Lightning Network and all that kind of thing. I think that would be a wonderful thing. So yeah,
Michael Saylor really was a great justification from traditional finance. And he's been a great evangelist for Bitcoin ever since he got on board. So I think, you know, where there is still a time of question or not of, you know, the validity of Bitcoin in the world at large, aside from, you know, those of us who are crypto native, I think he was a great bridge to help, you know, a lot of people and a lot of funds cross that river into crypto. So great answer.
Yeah.
And lastly, if you could give us some words of advice, not just for getting into crypto, but if we wanted to get into gaming, if there's a lot of people out there that are going to go download their first browser game or log into their first, you know, play to earn thing, you know, what's some words of advice that you would give people to either, you know, allow them to have more fun or just some dangers to watch out for?
So do you mean, so just to clarify the question, do you mean specifically in the sort of play to earn space or just gaming in general?
The play to earn space.
Play to earn space. Okay. Well, if you're looking at this as kind of an investment, you know, you're hoping to find a project where, you know, like you said earlier on, that you might be able to make a bit of side cash, or, you know, even work during retirement or something like that. My advice is to look for a game that's going to be long lasting, that has a really great product, that has a really great team. And something that is scalable, I think. And in order to really kind of achieve that, I think you need to see gameplay. And if it looks kind of old and a bit rubbish, I'd probably stay away if you're seeing this in the long term. So I guess the approach I'm saying is look at the team who's building it and look at the roadmap and see if this is going to be a really great game. So to shill Infinite Fleet a little bit here, I've got to say that, you know, our team really is a solid team of AAA veterans, right? So like Jason Lee, our chief creative, he was like the lead gameplay designer on Age of Empires 4, which is just massive IP, right? Wayne, our director of art, he actually worked on one of the first ever 3D animated Spider-Man shows at Sony. He worked on FIFA in EA. So, you know, we've been led by some really, really incredible luminaries and AAA veterans here. So we're taking a very long time term view for Infinite Fleet. This is a game that we want to last for decades, right? Something that's going to be like EVE Online, that's going to really capture people's imagination and create an incredible community. So I would say look at something like that. I mean, if Infinite Fleet's not your cup of tea, then obviously, you know, look elsewhere for something that's high fantasy or something that's doing the same thing.
But it should be at least as good of quality.
I would say so. I'd say at least you should be looking at something that's a game, not just about the economy. If they're constantly talking about the economy this, the financials that, here's the white paper. I mean, when did games have a white paper? I mean, you know what I mean? That... Well, you've got to focus on the game, the product, in my opinion. Otherwise, I suspect there's going to be a rug pull because mostly the people who are building it are focused completely on the finances as opposed to the fun, which is the primary aspect. Because if there's no fun, players will find no value in the items long term.
That is fantastic advice, Chris. Thank you so much. And where can we go check out Infinite Fleet for ourselves?
Infinitefleet.com. So yeah, just to clarify, it is Infinite, not Infinity. A lot of people make the mistake of calling it Infinity Fleet, but no, it's infinitefleet.com. Yeah, and you can check us out right there.
Thank you so much for all your time and your wisdom today, Chris. This has been really educational for me, and I'm sure our audience as well. So we look forward to having you back in the next couple years, or, you know, when Infinity Fleet or Infinite Fleet.
You did it.
I did it. Now that you planted that seed in my head. Ah! Or
no
when
problem,
Infinite
my friend.
Fleet 2 may come out, or when Pixelmatic releases another game. So looking forward to continuing the conversation. And we will continue bringing you, the Crusaders of Crypt Nation, even more podcasts later this week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.